The sports desk at the Columbus Dispatch presents the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
With your host, Ohio State basketball beat writer Adam Jardy.
Brandon Batista, give me the rock. Here it goes. Up, up, and away. Slam jam, bam. And now he does a little dance.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Today is Monday, November 15th, 2021. It is my official duty to welcome you in to episode 227 of the Buckeye Extra Men's Basketball Podcast. Welcome to Jubilation City. Welcome back to Value City Arena. I am sitting here in the post-game work, or in the media workroom, excuse me, following Ohio State's third game of the season. The Buckeyes tonight easily handled Bowling Green by a final score of 89-58. This is a day where Ohio State dropped two spots in the AP rankings that came out at noon. And that was based on two unimpressive, occasionally lackluster wins to open the season, obviously needing a last-second shot to beat Akron in the opener, and then beating Niagara by 10, but never really putting the Purple Eagles away, and just really not looking all that dominant in either of those games. So tonight, Ohio State came out and got that dominant win. This was a game Ohio State just took control early, and frankly, I had 90% of my game story written by the time the second half began, because Ohio State jumped out to an 11-0 lead, allowed 4 points, then scored 11 more straight points. It was up 22-4 before any of us really knew what was happening, and that was the point where Bowling Green coach Michael Huger said that that's when he felt like the game really started to get away from them at that point. At the half, Ohio State led 41-18, which had me looking up all kinds of stats about the fewest number of points scored in a game at Value City Arena, and the last time Ohio State had held a team to this or to that. It leveled out a little bit in the second half, but Ohio State never took its foot off the gas. After outscoring Bowling Green 41-18 in the first half, they outscored Bowling Green 48-40 in the second half to win 89-58. Ohio State as a team shot 51.4% from the floor, 37.5% from three. And this was on a night where the Buckeyes shot 13 threes in the first half, 19 in the second half, as Bowling Green just kind of went to his zone, tried to slow things down. Ohio State just kept moving the ball, finding somebody, and they would just let something go. Buckeyes, as a further evidence of that, Ohio State only shot 7 free throws. So on a night where Ohio State got 70 shots, where Ohio State had 27 assists on 36 makes, the Buckeyes only shot 7 free throws. Did actually kind of keep the game moving. Just didn't have a lot of stoppages in this one. Ohio State committed 12 fouls and was fouled 13 times. I think there was pretty quickly a really strong sense that this one was a mismatch. And Ohio State played like the team you would expect it to be when it's hosting a team from a mid-major conference on its home floor early in the season. This was, frankly, the kind of game I think we've expected to see more of from Ohio State here in the early going. Now, the big news out of this, and what the majority of this podcast is going to be, is that Justice Suing was not part of this game. And it is unclear at this moment when or possibly if Justice Suing will return this season. So that casts a significant pall over how post-game went, over I think how excited Ohio State fans should feel about this win, certainly how excited Chris Holtmann felt about the win. And I think it raises some very interesting questions about where this season potentially could be going if this injury, in fact, continues to linger. So we'll get more into Justice here in a moment. When you run down the box score here, you had 5 Buckeyes in double figures. EJ Liddell had 13 on 6 of 8 shooting, only played 19 minutes, 52 seconds. Frankly, didn't really need to do much. Had 4 assists, 2 turnovers, was plus 23. So he had 13. Amici Johnson also had 13. He played 25 minutes, 2 seconds. He had 13 points on 12 shots. He was 5 of 12 from the floor, 3 of 8 from 3. Had a rebound, 3 assists, 3 turnovers, 4 steals. So they led Ohio State in scoring. And then you had Gene Brown had 12. Zed Key had 12. Zed came 1 rebound away from another double-double. He finished with 12 points and 9 boards. Gene had 12 points, 5 of 9 shooting. He hit 2 threes, had some nice dunks. And then Justin Arns had 11. on 3 of 4 shooting, all from three. Also was 2 of 3 from the free throw line, finished with 5 rebounds. That rounds out Ohio State's double-digit scores. You also got 8 from Malachi Branham, who was 3 of 8 from the floor, 0 of 3 from three. Finished with two rebounds, 3 assists, 2 turnovers, 1 steal. Ohio State as a team, 27 assists. I had to go back and do some digging. It has been a while since Ohio State has had that many assists in a game. In fact, it has been several seasons. The Ohio State's last game with 27 assists was a 94-65 win against the Citadel on December 19th, 2017. Ohio State got a lot of assists from a lot of dudes, and Chris Holtmann used the phrase one mores, as in guys did a really good job making one more pass. And you had Jamari Wheeler leading the way. He had 5 assists, 1 turnover. So Jamari's now up to 12 assists and 1 turnover on the season. Jamari only played 17 minutes and 56 seconds. Holtmann was able to really empty his bench in this one. But Jamari had 5. EJ Liddell had 4. And then you had Malachi had 3. Joey Brunk had 3. Michi Johnson had 3. And Jimmy Sotos had 3. Jimmy Sotos played 14 minutes and 9 seconds, scored his first points of the season. He did have 5 points, hit a 3. So he had 3 assists as well. And then you had 2 from Kyle Young, 2 from Gene Brown, and then Justin Arnes and Cedric Russell also chipped in an assist. Cedric was back. He missed the last game with a death in the family. He came back. He was the last scholarship player off the bench. Wound up playing 7 minutes and 58 seconds. He missed the 2 3-pointers that he attempted, but like I said, did have the assist. And Harrison Hookfin got 3 minutes and 10 seconds. He did get a shot around the right block that didn't fall, but he played 3 minutes and 10 seconds toward the end there, which, again, shows you that this game was out of hand for a really long time. And it was, if you're looking for positive signs before we get into the doom and gloom that came with the Justice suing news, it's the fact that Ohio State beat a team that it was supposed to beat in the manner that it was supposed to beat it. I think this is a lot more along the lines of what you would expect. Akron was only picked to finish 1 spot higher than Bowling Green in the MAC this year. The Zips were picked 5th. Bowling Green was picked 6th. And they were only separated by like 4 points in the voting. So on paper, these are two teams that are very much a toss-up. And you got an Akron game that needed a Zed Key bucket with less than a second left for Ohio State to emerge with a 1-point win. And then you have a 31-point win that was really over from about the first media timeout. So there are definitely some positives to take out of this for Ohio State. And the fact that you got a lot of guys some minutes and you got things rolling in going into Thursday's showdown at Xavier, which I think is going to be obviously a whole different animal for this Ohio State team. But the big question and concern is Justice suing status. And so we'll talk about that here in a second. Before we do, I want to remind you, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google, wherever else you enjoy the finest of podcasts. As we are now fully into the season, podcasts will be coming at you fast and furious. So make sure you hit that subscribe button, and that way you'll just get the newest ones as soon as they are recorded, and as soon as our guy Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, can smash them together and get them to your ears. Credit to him for editing out all my faux pas and for dealing with me and a podcast that I will occasionally just randomly drop on him. So thanks to Patrick for putting these together and helping me out with this. And thank you, if you're listening to this, for listening. Thank you for subscribing. While you're doing that, if you would, please leave a review. 5 stars, nice things. All that stuff is very much appreciated. So we learned shortly before the game that Justice suing not only would not be available for the game, but that he wasn't even with the team at the moment. It turned out that he was able to get in and see a specialist in Cleveland. And if they didn't get him in today, he wouldn't get in until sometime in December. And so as a result, Chris Holtmann said that he wasn't going to play today anyway. He wasn't feeling up to it. He wasn't physically able to play. So they did everything they could to get him to that appointment. He arrived about midway through the game. I noticed him on the bench. He's wearing jeans and a gray sweater. But we don't know the exact diagnosis, other than there was a lot of doom and gloom coming out of that post-game press conference. Far more than you would normally expect from a 31-point home win. And Chris Holtmann said that there's no real word on him right now other than he had to be evaluated. He was not able to play. I did not feel he was going to be able to play, so we sent him to a specialist. Productive meeting, but what plan moving forward we're going to have, and if he's going to play Thursday at Xavier, all those questions kind of remain open-ended. So I went back and I started looking, because this is something that we've talked about on here. This is something I've written a lot about, but it set off some warning bells to me that when I spoke to Justice on Media Day, which was right before, they do Media Day right before practice starts at Ohio State. And when I spoke to him at Media Day, I was asking him about the groin injury he had suffered last season, because that clearly impacted Ohio State in the postseason. It had a significant role in the Oral Roberts loss. Honestly, I firmly believe if not for this injury, Ohio State would have won that game. I don't see any way around it. And so I started going back and looking at when the injury took place, like when he started dealing with it. And it was on his radio show in mid-March, Chris Holtmann said that Justice underwent an undisclosed procedure after dealing with a groin injury. And he had that done 1 week prior to the Illinois game. So you look last year, on February 28th, Ohio State got beaten at home by Iowa in a really uncompetitive game that Chris Holtmann lamented afterward, that was a game that didn't bring the fight that they needed. And Justice only played about 20 minutes in that game, which didn't necessarily set off any alarm bells because a lot of guys just did not have it in that game. But then they played Illinois on March 6th, and that was the point where 9 days later is where Chris Holtmann says that Justice had undergone this procedure before the Illinois game. So that's kind of our starting point here. We're talking early March of 2021. So you fast forward to late September and right before the start of preseason camp, and I asked Justice about the injury, and he says that it's something that he's still – It's lingered, and he didn't want to get any specifics about it, which I thought was kind of strange, but it was something that they were still working to get under control, and that was concerning. But I kind of put that in the back of my head and filed it away, because when we did get to see a little bit of practice 2 weeks into the preseason, he looked really good. The little bit of scrimmaging that we saw, I mean, E.J. Liddell looked good, but Justice was just getting to his spots, scoring from just about everywhere, and looked every bit like a major impact player for this team. And I started thinking to myself that as you look at this roster, Justice Suing is going to have as big of a role as anybody, save for E.J. Liddell. And that's why when I did my preseason power rankings, I had Justice Suing second. And I know that there are some people who have projected him as a potential all-league type of player. And I firmly believe that has been in the cards for him this season, that if Ohio State were to remain competitive near the top of the Big Ten, which is what I think this team would do with a healthy Justice Suing, it wouldn't just be E.J. Liddell. Someone else would have to be filling in that role. And I felt like the way Justice asserted himself sort of down the stretch last season and what he was able to do in the Big Ten tournament made me think that he was in line for a major role. And I asked Chris Holtmann about that during the preseason. He talked about Justice being a playmaker and about how last year when Ohio State was down so many guys in the backcourt, he stepped in, he handled the ball. There were some issues there. He needed to work on tightening his handle a little bit, but that sort of role was in the cards for him this year. He was going to be asked to play make. He was going to be asked to score. He's going to be asked to distribute. He's going to be asked to handle the ball. Like, this dude was a significant part of the game plan for this season. And one of the things that Chris Holtmann mentioned tonight was that there is not a like-for-like replacement for Justice Suing on this roster. And when I think about how you get the best players, the best all-around lineup on the court for Ohio State, I think a player like Justice, who can contribute at both ends because he's so big and athletic and long, the thought of having him in the lineup with, like, as they go further along the season, and like a Malachi Branham or a Michi Johnson, whatever those guys look like when we get to January and February, I think you obviously need and will use Jamari Wheeler in a pretty significant role. But he is very much a defensive player, and I do think there are offensive limitations there. And so when you start thinking about what's the best balanced lineup you can put out there, I was starting to talk myself into some sort of combination of having like Justice and Malachi, and then maybe like Justin Arnes or Michi, and EJ Liddell, and then whether it's Kyle Young or Zed, whatever, there's a lot of pieces to mix and match here, but this best team has healthy Justice Suing on the court for 34 minutes a game, possibly. And he's playing a small forward. Maybe he's playing a power forward in a smaller lineup. Maybe he's handling the ball. He's initiating the offense. There's a lot of things that for this team to be its optimal level, Justice Suing is doing those things. And now it's concerning that he's shut down right now. And we don't have the full answer right now. He started the preseason without too much in the way of restrictions. But Holtman said it was right before the closed scrimmage against Ole Miss on October 24th that Justice started to feel off, that he started to experience some of the same pain and symptoms that he had during the postseason last year. And that was where, if you recall, every time he came out of the game, he's sitting there on the bench with a hot towel on his groin to keep things loose. I also don't know why it was described as a groin injury last year, and the injury has lingered. They're now referring to it as like a lower leg or lower body injury, excuse me. So it is the same injury. Like, it's not, this isn't something new. This is a reoccurrence of what happened last year. And last year it was described as a groin injury. So I don't quite know what to make of the discrepancy there, but that's the terminology that's being used. So he didn't play, he started to deal with the injury before the Ole Miss scrimmage. He did not play against the University of Indianapolis in the exhibition. Then he came off the bench, and he didn't look like himself. That Akron game, he looked really raw, really rough. And I thought, man, this is a dude who's not gotten the practice time that he needed. Only had 2 points in that game. Didn't get to the free throw line. I thought he looked better against Niagara. He had 10 points in that game. He did get the free throw line, but he had two free throw attempts in that game. In the two games, he had 0 assists, 1 turnover, and only 2 free throw attempts. And this is a guy who led the team in free throw rate last year. He took the second highest number of free throws, but as far as like having the ball in his hands and then correlating that to how many times you got to the line, he was the best in this Ohio State team at doing that. It was a huge part of why they recruited him so heavily when he transferred out of Cal. They really believed that that would translate to the Big Ten, and it did. So not having him just changes a lot. I asked Holtman if he was worried about this being a potentially season-ending injury. And he said, I don't know right now that it's season-ending. I think it is significant, but I don't know what to make of that. Without him, like I mentioned earlier, Ohio State had pretty great balance across the board and got a lot of contributions from a lot of dudes and just played Bowling Green off the court. They didn't need Justice Suing to win this game, but they're going to need him going forward. And that was one thing that Holtman said, quote, I'm not going to minimize the importance of Justice or Justice's health to this team. We certainly anticipated a healthy Justice to start the season, and I think planned around all of what he could give us. He's unique because there's not another Justice-type player on our roster that has the ability to play at his size, to play downhill and guard multiple positions. I'm hopeful and optimistic that we can have him and Seth back. We really need those guys back. We know Seth's timetable. We don't know Justice's timetable. To say it's not a significant hit, I wouldn't be honest. It is. And then we talked about some other things, and then I asked Chris, I said, can you describe your emotions right now? Because obviously this is a 31-point win. You've got a bunch of guys in double figures. You're able to empty your bench, spread out your minutes, get some experience for a bunch of guys. The schedule's about to ramp up here. Normally this would be a much more upbeat demeanor. Like this, there would be a different vibe around here in this moment. I said, can you just explain or try to describe like your emotion? And he gave a long answer where he used the word disappointed, and he used it 4 times in his answer. And he sort of summed it up by saying, in a season like this, there's so many things that come at you as a head coach. You've got to move forward. We've got guys that are more than capable. We're going to coach those guys. We're going to get them ready. We're going to move forward and hope that our medical staff gets Justice ready to go as soon as he's ready.
You have to stand behind a statement like the best buying experience in the business. At Rosati Windows, their commitment to the customer has not changed since day one. Mike Rosati realizes that people have options when choosing replacement windows, which is why he appreciates each and every one of their customers.
At Rosati Windows, they pride themselves on their very high standards of business ethics and customer satisfaction. They are accredited with an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, a top business with Consumer Choice, and voted by Central Ohio as the best in business in the window category with the Columbus Dispatch. The list goes on and on, but it's important to point out that their customers voted for Rosati Windows for these awards, and it's why they can make a statement like, Rosati Windows is the best buying experience in the business. So a few more notes before I wrap this one up, because it is starting to get late into Monday night and I need to get home, but a couple of things that went in the postgame notebook, which is published to dispatch.com and buckeyeextra.com already. First is that Kyle Young continues to shake off the rust, and I thought looked a lot sort of like the Kyle Young that we've come to expect. In only 13 minutes, 53 seconds, 8 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, was just impactful. He was plus 19 in his 13 minutes. It was again brought up that this is going to be a fluid lineup, that rotations will change and starters will change. The Buckeyes did stick with the same starting lineup as in the Niagara game, which meant that Malachi Branham made his second career start. Meechie Johnson came off the bench. Meechie ended up playing more minutes than Malachi did in this game. But Holtman did say that Kyle Young is, I mean, he's as healthy as he can be. The only thing holding him back now is fitness and conditioning and things that you would expect for a guy who missed a pretty good part of the preseason. Holtman said, quote, the issues that he had as far as the vestibular dysfunction are better and they're cleared up. The biggest thing that's holding him back, and that was the biggest thing holding him back and bothering him. He said, we all know how critical he is to us. He's 100% in terms of how he feels. He's just got to shake the rust off. He hasn't had much live play, live action. Kyle has started 65 games during the last 2 seasons. Holtman sounded a little bit like Dr. Seuss with his answer, asked about if Kyle could stay in this role coming off the bench or if he would like him to start. And Holtman made me think of green eggs and ham. He said, I like him starting. I like him coming off the bench. I like him playing early. I like him playing late. I like him playing in the middle. I like him playing. So I'm not ready to make any big statements right now on what our lineup's going to look like. Pointed out how Travion Williams at Purdue is a first team all-league guy who's coming off the bench. Said he'll definitely start on senior night, but it could change in a week. It could change next game. So he would not, could not in a house. He would not, could not with a mouse. He would not, could not here or there. He would not, could not anywhere. He does not like green eggs and ham. He does not like them, Sam I Am. And yes, I've read that book a million times to both of my boys over the last 7 years. But that was my first thought when I heard that answer. I thought Holtman was channeling his inner Dr. Seuss there. I also thought he looked a little bit like Johnny Cash tonight. Holtman went with like an all-black look, a black suit coat without a tie, and like a dark shirt and dark pants. I'm terrible when it comes to fashion. I consider myself lucky that I'm wearing a gray sweater tonight because it means I don't have to worry about matching. As long as I know not to wear like the same color pants with my shirt, I'm probably okay. So I'm the last guy to give out fashion advice. But I did think Holtman went with the all black look. Reminded me of Johnny Cash tonight. Justin Arnes also had a night that I thought was notable, although when I asked him about it, he didn't really give too much on this topic. But he hit a three-pointer 20 seconds into the second half, which gave him 11 for the game. He came out about a minute or so later and didn't come back in because there was no need for him to play any further in the game. But those 11 points moved him 1 point past his older brother's career scoring mark. In 4 seasons at Michigan State, Kyle Arnes scored 355 career points. Justin now has 356 points. And he entered the game with 100 career three-pointers. He's now up to 103. Justin said that he saw a text from his brother saying that he hit his 103. And then Justin just said, I'm not focused on that. The main thing is learning from this one and getting ready for Xavier. I guess that's sort of the answer you would expect from a fourth-year senior who has been lauded on multiple occasions by Chris Holtman for his commitment and his ability to just keep grinding and keep getting better. That he said that's what you would expect from a fourth-year guy, but he said he's just very consistent and that he said he's, quote, he's worked to the standard that you'd expect a fourth-year guy to work to. I'm proud of him for that. He and EJ have been our two most consistent guys. He said I'd put Jamari right there as well. So I don't think we've really seen he hit a couple of threes in this game, like I said, and I think his defense has improved significantly. I had somebody mention that to me on Twitter. They said, is it just me or does Justin look like a much better defensive player? And I quoted them and said, no, I agree. It's not just you. So I think we're seeing a little bit more of an evolution to where he's not forcing his shot. Although I think as the season goes on, he needs to shoot more. I think that's becoming more clear. I don't know on this team who is really a knockdown shooter. I mean, we've heard good things about Jimmy Stotos. We've heard good things about Cedric Russell, but those guys are clearly at the end of the rotation right now. I mean, this is a team that without Justice Suing is going nine deep. And that's a rotation that includes Justin Arns, Zed Key, EJ Liddell, Malachi Branham, Jamari Wheeler, and then possibly Meiji Johnson so far. Those six kind of in the starting mix. And then Joey Brunk, Kyle Young, Gene Brown filling out the rotation coming off the bench. And then once you kind of get through that group, then that's where Jimmy Stotos and Cedric Russell start to come in. I'll be interested to see what Cedric's role continues to maybe look like going forward, if he's able to adapt and we start seeing him earn some minutes. He's obviously in a tough spot, and he missed the last game due to a death in the family. So I knew he was available, and obviously we saw him during pregame, but I wasn't sure if he would even play. I don't know how much, if at all, he's practiced the last few days, so I don't think it's necessarily fair to hold him to a super high standard for this game. But I do think it's pretty clear that the rotation is kind of what it is at this moment. Certainly could change and will change, and guys are going to have more opportunities, especially as Justice is out. But that's just kind of where the rotation stands right now. And there's going to be a lot of talk here, and we did talk a lot post-game about the opportunity now to go to Xavier and what that looks like and how this is a significantly more challenging situation for Ohio State. I mean, you're talking Ohio State's games were against Akron, ranked 124th in KenPom, Niagara, 220 in KenPom, Bowling Green, 158 in KenPom. It amps up significantly here. Ohio State will play Xavier, which is 37th at Xavier on Thursday, and then it will face Seton Hall in Fort Myers on Monday. Seton Hall's 35th. Then the next opponent is to be determined, but it'll be a high major team. And then the next game back here in Value City Arena will be in 15 days when Duke comes to town. And then it's at Penn State, ranked 81st in KenPom. Then Towson for Wednesday, December 8th, barn burner of a game, ranked 233rd in KenPom. But Ohio State's now staring at a stretch of five straight games of top 81 KenPom teams and four straight games of top 40, top 50 type of KenPom games. So it's going to get harder. And I think it was important for Ohio State to beat the brakes off a team like it did Bowling Green tonight, to show that it could do that and to get a couple of guys just a little bit more confidence going into what's just going to be one heck of a road environment. I can't wait to see what that looks like. I was fortunate enough to be there when Ohio State beat Xavier in the NCAA tournament. I did cover that game for a different outlet that I worked for at the time. And I have a pretty good handle on what, at least I think I have a pretty good handle on what that might be like on Thursday, and how much this game is going to mean to the Musketeers. So I'm not certain if I'll record another. I probably will. Before the game starts, look for something new. It'll probably be shorter, but just a status update, what we learn as we get closer to the start of the game. And I'll have a lot of content between now and the game on dispatch.com and BuckeyeXtra.com. So please make sure you're looking out for that. I was able to pick up a really cool record on Friday. My guy Richard Ashcroft, lead singer for The Verve, put out an album of, it's a little bit of a cash grab, I feel like, but I still love it. He put out an album of himself, like re-recording some of his best stuff acoustically. So it's kind of, I'm a sucker for a great song that can be stripped down to an acoustic version. And that dude has written some of the all-time great songs. And yes, everybody knows Bittersweet Symphony. And that sounds really cool on an acoustic guitar, by the way. But man, you go down the list with Lucky Man and The Drugs Don't Work and Sonnet and Break the Night with Color. And then I always dislike the song title, but it's got a good vibe to it. And he duets with Liam Gallagher on it, but he does Come On People, We're Making It Now. And it's just such a jam. Really digging that album. I picked up the vinyl and have just been spinning that constantly. So that's new in my record collection right now. And I would encourage everybody on Friday to go out and buy the Oasis Nebworth 1996 release. The greatest band of all time at the peak of their power. Can't wait to listen to that. The documentary was amazing, and listening to the whole show is just going to be fantastic. Liam Gallagher's voice never sounded better. And man, what a time that was to be an Oasis fan. Even if you were 13 years old and living in Northwest Ohio and didn't even know Nebworth was happening at the time. Still, it's a good time to be an Oasis fan. It's always a good time to be an Oasis fan. All right, you can send along your questions, your comments, your love notes, your hate mail, and otherwise constructive criticism to me at Adam Jardy on Twitter or ajardydispatch.com. Thank you, as always, for listening, and thank you to Patrick Flaherty for stitching this together. I'll be back with you later in this week. So until then, thanks.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra Podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.